Welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interview, and welcome to Rebecca Anderson, today's guest in Room 42. Rebecca has a PhD in professional writing, and she's an associate professor at the University Writing Program at the University of California, Davis. She teaches courses in professional and technical communication and serves as the associate director for professional writing. Her research focuses on the implications and content management practices for education and research in technical communication, as well as strategies for building stronger connections between academia and industry. Today, she's here to help us start answering the questions. What do practitioners think about academic research, and how can they extract more value from it? Welcome, Rebecca.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're very excited to have you here today. Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking to you. And the topic of your study is of great interest to us, because after all, that's what Room 42 is about, is trying to help bridge that gap between academia and practitioners. So you are the expert on this topic.
So I don't know about expert, but certainly interested in the topic.
Well, right. Well, and you've done research in this very topic. So tell us about the research work that you did. And you did this with Joanne Hackos, right?
Yes. Yeah. So Joanne and I, a couple of years ago, I think it's a few years now, Mike Albers published a special issue in Technical Communication, which is STC's journal. And that issue focused on communication of research between practitioners and academics. And that got Joanne and I really thinking about, well, what do practitioners really think about academic research? The issue had some really excellent articles in it, but one of the questions I didn't really get at was the perspectives and experiences of practitioners reading academic research and the extent to which they're finding it useful. So what Joanne and I did is we put together a survey our goal was to really learn from practitioners about what are they reading, why are they reading it, what are they not reading, what do they find useful, what do they not find useful, and what suggestions do they have for how we can improve the communication of our research.
Right, so it wasn't just, you know, hey, what's your overall thought? It was really actually, what are you reading?
Right. And
A deeper dive into it, not just a quick opinion survey. Okay.
Yeah, and one of the things we did that's a little different than I think from some of the other surveys that have been out there is we both knew that probably the majority of those who are completing our survey don't know much about academic research and aren't regular readers of it. Right. So what we did is we included 18 titles of articles that have been published in 6 different journals at the time, the most recent issues, and we also included abstracts. I believe we did 3 abstracts from each of our 6 main journals for a total of 18 abstracts. So we are asking those who were completing the surveys to read the titles and to let us know, like, are you very interested, somewhat interested, or not interested? And then we gave them an opportunity to also explain their response. So we did that for both the titles and the abstracts. And we received a lot of qualitative feedback. People were more than happy to share their thoughts about those abstracts and titles. So that was really interesting for us. And then what we did as a follow-up to the survey, we did a series of interviews with 11 managers and consultants, but also people who regularly serve as reviewers for our journals or on the editorial boards. So these are people who have actually quite a bit of experience
with academic
publishing. So that was our follow-up to the survey. And we, these poor people, we asked them to read, I believe it was a total of 12 articles from the 6 different journals, as well as a number of articles from our trade journals. And then we interviewed them about their experiences going through that process. And asking for ideas and suggestions.
And did you guys put the abstracts together, or did you use the ones that the writers had put together with the title?
We did the original abstracts, and so they were anonymous. We did not let on which journals they were from, nor who the authors or the researchers were.
So kind of testing out how well academics are writing titles and abstracts too.
Definitely. That was one of our big takeaways, kind of rethinking the title and abstract as more or less the sales pitch, right, for the research. Because a lot of people who aren't in academia, we don't, you don't have access to write the full articles. You have access to the title and the abstract. And so right. if we don't do a good job really articulating the value and significance of the research to more than an audience of academics, there's a very little chance someone's going to want to purchase that article or read the entire article.
Back in July, we had George Hayhoe from Mercer, and he mentioned that at least in the journal he edits, professional technical communications at IEEE. I'm hoping I'm getting the name right.
Transactions.
Yeah, there you go. He said that they always included a practitioner's takeaway in the article. Are you finding that everywhere, or is that a trend, or like, I didn't even know that was in there.
No, that's a really good question. As far as I know, two of our journals do have practitioner takeaways. So one is the IEEE Transactions on Professional Communication, and that journal focuses on applied research. So that makes a lot of sense. And then STC's Technical Communication, they've had a practitioner's takeaway for a very long time. But for IEEE Transactions, that's a fairly new, addition to the journal. It's only been in the last, 2 years under George's editorship that that's been something we require of authors.
Interesting. Well, it sounds like that would be a nice thing to put in the abstract, though, too. here are the things that you're going to pick up from there. Because that, if it's inside, you're not going to know.
Right.
That's the first place that's going to capture someone's attention.
Yeah. Right. And that's one of the suggestions that we saw our respondents to the survey, but also our interviewees from the series of interviews we conducted. By and large, most of those people we talked to wanted to see within the abstract better articulation of the takeaways for practitioner readers. And also potentially even kind of talking through perhaps some use cases or like putting in some teasers of what some use cases might be for how that research might be applied.
Oh, that's an interesting one, the teasers of use cases. Sorry, go ahead, Janice.
No, well, I was just going to ask different, I just had a question. How do you even select, how do people even select what they're going to research on, right? What is the goal for someone to do research? Are there a couple of competing goals from the academia end?
I think there's many factors at play. What one chooses to research often has a lot to do with what academic program they've come from, what their dissertation research, was focused on, who they were working with while completing their PhD. So for some people in the field, they're really interested in examining workplace practice and doing empirical studies, and perhaps they have extensive training in conducting qualitative or quantitative studies. Others in the field are more interested in questions of interdisciplinary is one, but disciplinarity, like who we are as a field, what are our research methods, what questions are we asking? And then others are researching pedagogy, like how are we teaching professional writing, editing, technical communication, content strategy in our courses, what are best practices? And then we have a pretty significant body of research, especially within the last few years on social justice and really looking at questions that we've asked before through a different lens of, equity and inclusion. And as we know in the field, there's a lot of research on accessibility that's been growing as well. So it's wide ranging, and it really depends on, somebody's background, but also their institutional context. Are they primarily teaching? Are they primarily a researcher? Do they have a balance? And how much time do you have, right, to conduct empirical research versus perhaps an analytical study?
Is there a university influence to that too? Like, do certain researchers at different universities have different, is there a focus that's attached in that way?
I mean, in terms of institutional context, I would say those researchers, especially who are on the tenure track and who are pre-tenure, there's the whole publish and perish, right pressure. So there's a lot of being really focused on the end goal in terms of tenure and promotion. And so there's often not a lot of time to conduct empirical studies, and workplace studies do take a lot more time because there's a lot of setup, right? There's a lot of getting things in place, a lot of collaboration, and then analysis. And then the whole publishing process can be 1 to 2 years once you've submitted an article. So that's always a factor at play. There's also, I mean, that's kind of the rewards factor. Gaining access to workplace sites is another factor. Sometimes that could be a real barrier to conducting research. And then some institutions, there's a lot of pressure to get grants, to really focus on getting, participating more on maybe interdisciplinary research teams that aren't necessarily just technical and professional communication. So really there's a lot of factors, I would say, at play. But generally as a field, we do have every few years, there's usually an article that comes out that's trying to bring us together and thinking through what are the research questions we're asking. What is our research agenda as a field? So that kind of keeps us, you know, there's cohesion there in terms of what we're researching.
So where are we? Oh, sorry, there's a group of all different universities that come together. I missed that a little bit.
It's not a matter of universities coming together, although there have been a couple of initiatives in the past. But they're like, for example, Carolyn Rood, she's now retired, but she's published on occasion while she was still a researcher. She published an article in 2009 called Mapping the Research Questions in the Field. Mm-hmm. And so she did an extensive look at what had been published. I don't know if it was a 10-year period. But what she was able to tease out is our research primarily has focused on at the time, practice, pedagogy, disciplinarity, and social change. Like those were kind of the buckets. And in those buckets, there are a series of questions. But I can say that one initiative that I've always thought was really kind of a cool thing I'd love to see done again. This was in the year 2000 that Rachel Spilko was kind of a spearheader of the initiative. Now I'm forgetting what they called it, but the idea was, it was at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and a lot of practitioners were invited to come, and also some prominent research in the field, to sit down at a table over a couple of days and really talk through research in the field. What are the questions we should be asking? What are the needs in the workplace for the kinds of studies we need to be conducting? So really trying to map out an outline questions that then those of us in the field who conduct research can look to and perhaps develop studies to explore.
Interesting.
Because ultimately you want to be investing, you know, research. I mean, sure, even if you're on the pre-tenured track or you're on the track to become tenured, you do want to do research that's of value to people, to practitioners, right? So that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
We have a lot. I mean, the field, as you know, is incredibly diverse. So our, I mean, the research that's being published, it ranges from intercultural communication, the focusing on ethics, to usability and user experience, right? Content strategy, collaborative writing, editing. So it's very wide ranging and very diverse.
It is.
That's true. It is one of the fields that touches like everything.
It does.
Everything. And somebody asked, who's not in the field, and they ask, well, where are writers? I'm like, well, they touch your life in every single way. That little aspirin bottle, that was a technical writer.
Right. Somebody wrote those instructions on the back of the can of soup.
If you've gotten an IKEA, that was a writer that was involved. There's writers, they're in everything.
Right. Yeah. Well, one of the things we learned in our study is the majority of those whom we talked to and completed the survey were interested in research. They really did see that research has potential value. Very interested in topics that were relevant, and also feeling many of the topics they were looking at in those titles and abstracts appeared to be relevant. And so the challenge for them was, okay, this looks potentially really interesting and relevant, but it's really hard to parse. And I'm not sure what the takeaways are, given the way the abstract and title are written. And then those who we interviewed who read the articles had the same kind of takeaway. Like, So that comes back to us on our end, and how are we thinking about audience, right? Yeah. Are we thinking about our different audiences? Since our journals do have as their stated aims, right, that we're publishing our practices and trends and problems in the field with the goal of meeting the needs of readers in both academia and industry. So we've done as researchers a really good job of talking to other researchers, but we can do better, I think, take some strategic steps to meet the needs of all of our readers.
Sorry.
I'm just curious. Well, I was curious because something about the way you said it. When you were looking at the titles and the abstracts, what articles were you using? And who were you asking questions of? Were you all talking TechCom articles to TechCom professionals? Were you talking about medical research to doctors? Right. Like, who were you talking to?
Good question. So we recruited practicing technical communicators. So those in the field who identify as technical communicators. So we had people who were information developers, right, who were actual technical writers or editors or content strategists, content engineers. So those were the people who completed the survey.
And they came from a variety of...
people who should know how to read and write.
Yeah. But a variety of industries.
A variety of industries. And if I remember right, somewhere around 60 to 70% of our respondents had been in management for at least 4 years. So also people who were situated in, they were in a position to be a decision maker. And so those were the people we recruited. In terms of the journals, we included titles and abstracts from 6 journals. So one is Communication Design Quarterly, which is published by ACM, Association of Computing Machinery, STC's Technical Communication, and then IEEE's Transactions on Professional Communication. The Journal of Business and Technical Communication, and there's also the Journal of Technical Writing and Communication, and then the 6th journal is Technical Communication Quarterly. And so these are the journals that we consider to be the 6 like flagship journals in the field.
Right, the big players.
Right, they're all referee journals, so they're all peer-reviewed journals. And these are the journals that researchers in the field in academia are primarily publishing in. In the field.
Yeah.
And so we did, when we were looking through the journals, I believe for the titles, we took the titles at the time from the most recent issues of each of those journals. And then we took the abstracts from the issues that have come out prior to the most recent issue. And then we did eliminate any abstracts or titles that were, and also articles for interviewees that were more focused on pedagogy or more like science communication, even kind of medical health communication, because we were really trying to target those practicing technical communicators and their experiences
and their
with
profession.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to say, what did you find?
Right.
It's a big question, right? It's like, it's a huge question.
It's a huge question. A few things that I could say that were really interesting. First of all, in terms of our survey respondents, we had 187 people who took the survey. Of those who took the survey, about 6% had actually studied professional technical writing or some flavor of professional technical writing in their degree program.
Interesting.
That was really interesting. So these are people coming from all different disciplines, STEM, humanities, social sciences.
Right.
Many people from humanities. But who may have studied English, as in English literature or creative writing,
right.
Perhaps journalism, but not, right, technical communication.
Was there an age component to that demographic?
The age range was pretty varied. We definitely didn't like center on, especially those in management positions, a lot of newer managers had also taken the survey. So that was interesting. And what that kind of suggests to us, as, and I think we maybe had 14% of our respondents had completed master's degrees in technical professional communication.
Okay.
So it wasn't surprising to us to learn that the vast majority of our respondents either were unfamiliar with or rarely or never read academic research.
Right.
Because you're mostly exposed to academic research within usually a graduate school context and sometimes within your degree program. So I guess a few takeaways, what we learned is that practitioners want research that's relevant to current work practices. And I think that's very understandable. They want research that is easy to parse, or at least isn't incredibly challenging to comprehend. So that, you know, kind of gets at like plain language needs. Research that has clear takeaways, practical applications. So even if it's a theory building article, there's always room to be able to talk about, okay, how might this theory be applied? Or what are some ways I could use this theory to think through particular problems or questions, right? So at least having some space within an article where you're talking to, right, a different audience.
Right, or just saying this could mean this in, in practice, right? Just giving some ideas of how they can shape their minds around the research.
Definitely.
And then plain language is so important. I mean, especially when you just consider that English is not everybody's first language. So the need to be plain, I think, would be paramount, because you really want to reach these people, everybody, right? So
That was the number one suggestion, was to move towards more of a plain language approach. And that doesn't mean not using theoretical terms and concepts.
Right, because at least in the abstract, right, and in conclusions. But the rest of the body, that's okay, because really when someone's reading a body of a research, they're really interested in reading the depth of research, right?
And so the other two points I will make in terms of takeaways is the promotion and accessibility were two big areas that are all of the people we interviewed and respondents wanted to talk about. So promotion in the sense of the journals could do a better job, I think, promoting research.
Awareness.
And also we in, you know, the larger community of TechCom can all do a better job promoting research. Promoting because a lot of people in the field don't know it exists, right? And we don't actively seek it out. In academia, we do, but and the practitioners most often aren't seeking it out. So this kind of, we need to push it, I think, more. And so there's promotion, but the other piece is accessibility in terms of just dissemination of research. So how can we make the articles we're publishing more accessible to readers outside of academia who have universities, right, with the databases we can access? So that was a big piece, too. And then I think if you're a practitioner, there are also ways that you can gain access to articles, you know, such as looking at researchgate.net to see, you know, what different people are publishing, but you can also gain access often to full articles there, or going to Google Scholar as a starting place and typing in the topic you're interested in and seeing who's publishing on that. And then go to that person's website or go to researchgate.net or academia.edu. to see if the articles are available there, or even to the journals.
So there is a central place that people can go to see what's going on in current research in the field of technical communication.
Yeah, I think so. If there's a topic that someone wants to learn about to see if anything's being published within the peer-reviewed journals, Google Scholar is an excellent place to start. Also, if there are any books that have been published on the topic. And you were not necessarily going to get the full text and probably won't get the full text, but it's the starting place because now you have the citation and you have the research team or authors.
Right.
That is a great tip. George mentioned Google Scholar, but hadn't quite put it, connected it for me like that. Like, this is what it's all about. But yeah, you use Google Search Scholar to research a topic and find those people to follow who are doing the research you're interested in. That is a great tip.
Exactly. And many of the researchers are on Twitter. The journals are also on Twitter, so you can follow Technical Communication Quarterly or Communication Design Quarterly. And what many of the journals are now doing is, before the articles are officially published, I think the model is an online first model. So they're published first online, but they're being promoted through Twitter and in some cases, Facebook. Rhetoric and Technical Communication is one group on Facebook that I'm a member of, and the journals are often giving us kind of teasers of what's coming or what's just come out.
Yeah, but you got to know about those beforehand, right? I can't tell you how many hours I've spent like digging around looking for, Oh, and then somebody will pop up, you know, a year later and like, oh, how am I not following that already? You know, you got to know about them first.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think so, it's good practice if you're interested in research and just having the different journals tagged. And most journals publish a new issue quarterly. And so, for example, IEEE Transactions just came out with its latest issue, and that's a September publication. So just kind of going to see what's been published, looking at the titles. If they're interesting, maybe dig a little deeper. If not, at least you're aware of, you know, what the latest issue is focusing on.
So I'm a little curious, and so is our attendees. How does TechCom research stack up against other research as far as the written reports? I mean, are they more clearly written in TechCom versus other disciplines? Have you done any reviews of other? Yeah, any comparison?
That's kind of what I was getting at with that other question. Like, what articles were you using?
How do we stack up against the science?
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know of any studies that have compared the way in which we're writing and presenting our research in our journals versus other journals. Yeah. But there is a standard format across at least these science disciplines, the STEM disciplines, and many of the social science disciplines. And that's what we call the IMRED format. And so what you're going to see, that means there's the introduction, right, which is introducing the research, framing the research in the study. Then you're going to have the methods. What was the methodology used, right? What research methods were used? Then that's going to be followed by results. And then often discussion, which is, right, the interpretation of the results. What does this all mean? And then the conclusion, which will often project future research, what should we be thinking about? That's where you will often find implications for research, practice, or teaching. So we call that the IMRED format, and that's pretty standard across the disciplines, not so much in the humanities. So if you're thinking about comparison in terms of especially the students I work with, we all kind of expect the same structure. And so we kind of learn how to read those structures, and we learn what's expected, right, within that particular structure or genre. I can say that most journals and most disciplines are really trying to gently nudge authors to write more in plain language. scientific journals, especially, those are notorious for being difficult to parse. Very challenging to read, and often because they're more technical and there's more quantitative, right, work to parse. It can be challenging to read.
Yeah,
but I think our discipline, I think, is doing a pretty good job trying to move more towards making our research more accessible. We have a long way to go, but I think we're moving in the right direction.
Well, and you know, I mean, it's interesting because when you're in a certain discipline, when you're in academia, there is a lingo that's different than how practitioners talk.
Yeah,
it's very interesting because as we're talking to more and more professors and people in the academia field, it's interesting from my perspective because I don't often talk to people in academia, and the way that their natural flow of conversation is very different than people in the practitioner's world.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. One of the most challenging exercises I've kind of put myself through for a very good reason is some of the articles I've written in the past, I've written for the academic journals first, and then I've published several pieces in the CIDM Best Practices newsletter through my work with Joanne Hackos, and that's the center that she used to direct, which is now directed by Dawn Stevens. So the exercise of trying to like take something that's been in an academic journal and now try to translate that and articulate that in a way that makes sense and that's accessible but also considered potentially of value to a practitioner reader is it's a challenge to not use some of those terms and to think about what's a better term to explain what this theory really means.
Because it's really interesting. Yeah. If you look at like just the definition of a technical communicator, and I think it applies to any technical or professional. The SDC has a great definition, and a little piece of that is like really key. And it kind of describes the difference and why they might have some difficulty parsing, because one of the things they're taught when they get out into the practicing world, their job is to make complex things easy to understand, right? It's to take complex and make it easy for the average layperson to understand. So when they come to looking at research, they're facing all this complexity, and they're then that switched in them. They're looking for something that's easy to understand. So yeah, they absolutely. Don't have to work hard at the subject matter expert to get it to seem easy, right?
Right.
Which is a lot of work. I mean, it's not easy to do.
Right. Well, yeah. One of the, a lot of the people Joanne and I had talked to, especially through the interviews, were strongly recommending that authors and or the journals publish the research in alternative formats. Mm-hmm. So something that's more of like an executive abstract that's written specifically for people outside of academia.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a great idea. The challenge there is, for at least for the authors, is often time, but also the reward system. And I think it would be really great, right, if universities could recognize those kinds of publications as having impact, right? Okay, impact in the field. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's potential there, and there might be other formats that we might be able to come out with, you know, via the journals or as researchers, authors.
And I think that's an important point to make, is that the organization needs to recognize the value in that, so that there is a reward for the authors of these research papers, that they are rewarded and recognized for that piece, right? Because it kind of stops at the published work. It doesn't continue on to, well, you took this extra step, and there's a reward there for that. Right. Because really, you know, at the heart of it, we're rewards driven. I can't tell you how many times I ran a marathon when I shouldn't have for that stupid medal. I am very rewards driven, right? But that's human nature.
Yeah, for sure. I do think in general that those on the tenure track and committees that are assessing research are more open than they have been in the past to rewarding collaborative work, interdisciplinary work, work that can be articulated as having impact, right, in the profession.
Yeah.
Right. And so I see that as a very positive move for the field, which I define as a field of, like, with practical applications, a field of practice.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's funny that we're talking about the definition again. SDC has a Slack channel, and they have an academics part of the Slack channel, so I will encourage you to join in there. But the vice president, Kirsty Taylor, just posted, she's asking members to supply their definitions right now. Mm-hmm. And so far, everybody's like, yeah, I'm curious as what everybody else's definition is. So, yeah, that's great. Thinking about the reward system, are you starting, as an academic, are you starting to get a push from university brass to having more outreach, like social media presence and blog posts and that kind of thing? Or are you not seeing that?
I think it's institution dependent. There are a lot of people in the field who are doing a really good job promoting their research, and they're on social media, making it kind of very, you know, public when something comes out. Mm-hmm. And that might be institutional pressure, but I think that's more personality, kind of an individual, like, sense of, you know, how they feel about putting the work out. My institution, certainly, that's not something that they ever talk about. My institution would love for everyone to be publishing or posting their pre-published work in their online open source repository for research. And the idea there is to make it more accessible to the public. But I would guess that most people outside of academia don't know that most institutions have an open source repository for sharing the collective faculty's research. That's another suggestion for those interested in looking to see who's publishing what, is looking at different institutions and to see what is their open source repository for research. And now I'm blanking on the one UC Davis uses. eScholarship is the one we use. And so that's where you can go to see what the faculty are publishing, and they're encouraging everyone to post their work. But the key is, copyright issues. And so when you're posting your work either on researchgate.net or on your open source repository, and it almost always has to be a pre-published version of the article before, it's gone off to be sent into production. So that's kind of the trick, is kind of being really careful with copyright and permissions.
That is one thing that Lisa Malzahn said a couple months ago. She's like, go to the researcher's blog post or their website to get that early unpublished stuff. So at least you get an idea of what is going to be in that final article if you can't get past the abstract.
Absolutely. And most researchers, if you email the researcher, they'll be thrilled to hear from you and will send you the full copy of the article. And that's a perfectly legit thing to do. So if anyone was interested in reading an article that I've published, email me and I will certainly send you a copy.
Because even if people don't have a website, there's usually something in the university where there's an email posted somewhere where you can reach out.
Almost always, right.
Yeah, almost always.
Go to the faculty page, Google the person's name, and you'll probably see on the first page which institution, they're affiliated with.
Yeah, exactly. So there's always a way to reach out. And and I think that that's, you know, you go straight to the person if you have questions. They're usually happy to answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how about, you know, that seems like a good idea. If you've got a project, like I see one of our attendees, she's very into accessibility. So if you were interested in accessibility, you could go find a researcher who's doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you pair up, like you've got, we're all the practitioners. You got deadlines and things to meet. And you don't have time to research necessarily the thing that will help your customer. But if you find the matching research, searcher, propose some research.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're interested in research on accessibility, find out who is doing that research. And if you have a work context or work site or a demographic that a group of researchers or a single researcher could have access to, many researchers would be thrilled, because access is a real barrier to conducting, especially empirical research. Given proprietary issues, and it's hard to get access to a company. But that idea of collaborating is certainly something that many researchers in the field are interested in doing, working with, you know, practitioners. And that I think is just a win-win, because you work together on the research design, and you really get to know the context and the issues. But then the researcher can kind of bring in, well, what's the larger conversation on this? What's already been published? How is this going to be situated within that body of research? And then designing the methods and the questions. So a lot of researchers have collaborated in that way. And certainly reaching out and seeing if somebody might be interested.
That's how, I think too, how practitioners can make research more relevant. Because I'm assuming that you run into a brick wall sometimes when you're trying to pierce that corporation, to get real corporate access. It must be challenging at
Absolutely.
Times. But if you're a practitioner inside the corporate, you're pulling in rather than trying to push in. So you're improving the value of the research by getting involved with the researchers.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd say anything you can do to help in terms of collaboration, whether it's helping to provide the space, access, and if that's all you do, that's tremendous, still benefit, or helping to collaborate on the research project itself, and to be a co-author. Another way that practitioners can help in shaping, research is serving as reviewers for some of the journals. So these are journals where all the articles published go through a peer review process. So each article is read by at least two reviewers. And I know that SDC's technical communication and IEEE's transactions, both editors are very good about making sure at least one of those reviewers is from the practitioner world. So the more we can do that, and the more people who are interested in serving as reviewers, the more they help to shape, what that research looks like.
Right. And I'm sure that the editors are always looking for more people to volunteer as a practitioner to-do review.
Definitely, especially on some of our newer like areas of research, like for example, content engineering, and now we're talking about like omni-channel, right? Content. Right. If we have experts in the field, if somebody is actually conducting research on this topic, and agile methodology is another one I've seen some articles come out on. I know George from Transactions is often looking for, right, experts, right, outside of academia who can help to be a reviewer for those kinds of pieces.
Yeah,
always, because you have your list, but you want that list to grow, and you want that list to be diverse.
Yes.
And it's hard to get it unless people stand up and raise their hand and say, hey, I'm willing to devote some time to review some articles. So people should reach out to the editors of those magazines to get on that list, to sign up to be a volunteer as a practitioner.
Absolutely. I think that would be a really good, that would be really great for the field in many ways. Mm-hmm. And because the journals, like all but one of the journals really does have a goal to meet the needs of readers outside of academia, not just within. And in order to do that, we need as much collaboration as possible, right? And input from readers outside of academia.
Well,
I was going to say, we don't necessarily have the circle, right? We need other people to come into our circle and say, hey, I'm here. Please, you know, I volunteer.
Yeah.
And then I don't know anyone who will turn a volunteer away.
No. Well, and it's the friendliest group of introverts I've ever met.
Oh, sure.
The more sociable, friendliest group of introverts I've ever met are in the technical communications field. It's amazing. And collaborative. So, I mean, they shouldn't worry about, well, gee, am I good enough or am I, you know, am I expert enough? Just contact the editors, tell them what you're interested in, talk to them, have a conversation. And as far as time constraint, I mean, the more of us who step in and volunteer, then the less burdensome it is on just a handful of people, right?
Right. Definitely contact the editor, and the editor will be able to say, like, you know, what's kind of the status of our reviewer board. Probably ask some questions, but certainly at the very least, we'll keep you in mind. Right.
Exactly. They'll be able to tell you what time constraint it would be. Like, you know, people are worried about, because we've all got lives, we've all got, you know, their professions. And I'm sure time is important to everybody. So, you know, when you're talking to the editor, they'll let you know what kind of time constraint you're looking at.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, they will always tell you.
Yeah.
Most of the journals do have reviewer guidelines. Some are more kind of extensive and, I guess, guided than others. But certainly if you're a reviewer, you will get guidance from the editor at the very least, but likely also a rubric that you can follow as you're reading. That can help kind of prompt you to think about certain kinds of questions and respond to those. Mm-hmm. With the goal of giving the authors constructive feedback, right? Because that article is then going to be hopefully revised. Some articles are rejected after that first round of review, but many are asked basically to do a revise and resubmit, in which case the team goes back and they revise based on the feedback from the reviewers, and then they resubmit. Right. And then the article comes back to the same reviewers in most cases.
Right, to check one final time. Mm-hmm. Speaking of final, our time, can you believe it? Our time is already up.
Wow.
I know, right? I could talk to you forever. It is very interesting. And I'm so thrilled that you took the time to spend some time with us, because this really is important. Because as a group, as a professional group, they're very interested in research and they want information. They create information. They also crave information that's relevant and that has value for them. And I think everything that you've talked about really helps both sides kind of come together to up their game, right? To increase that value and increase that accessibility. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. And I appreciate you doing this show. The Room 42 is exactly what we're talking about, right? Having these conversations, bringing these two worlds together, especially in a space such as this, where we can talk about research in an informal way.
So
I think what you're doing is of tremendous value, and I hope it continues.
Well, thanks to people like you who come and are willing to talk with the two of us.
Well, let's continue the conversation. We do need to keep thinking through other, more opportunities for collaboration, getting the word out and coming together. I really think it's imperative for the field.
So really quick, if people want to reach out to you, I think we've put in the show notes, you've got your contact information. They can connect with you on LinkedIn. And your paper that we were talking about, there's all that information in the...
Most of it, yeah. It's in the chat window and on the page and on the event page.
So we have, Joanne and I did publish on the series of interviews that we conducted. And we currently have an article that's under review that's going to present the results of the survey that I had talked about. So hopefully that'll be out, hopefully within the next year. But I did post on researchgate.net a couple of slide decks on talks that we've given in both the survey and on the interviews. And so there's some, I think, some good information in those decks.
Okay, good. And then they can stay tuned for, because the review process takes time.
It does.
It does take time.
It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time.
Yes, but we're excited about it. It was a great project.
Yeah,
and we're really excited to kind of build on the recommendations that, our respondents had for us.
Yeah, very exciting. All right.
Very cool.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For doing it.
It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to everybody who sent in questions.
Yeah, thanks for all the questions, guys. Thanks for being here. Okay, until the next time.
Bye.
Ciao.